Holy One, you entrust your word to us in the stories of our ancestors. Be in the words I speak and the thoughts of our hearts, that we may find your love and compassion calling to us. We ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Please be seated. Among the many pieces of parenting advice I have discovered is the idea that it diffuses resistance if you tell your toddler, "We will go to the park when you have finished lunch," as opposed to "eat your lunch." It probably works for some toddlers. And certainly knowing the reward makes a difference in our household for the adults as well as the kids. I can't help but notice, however, that this is really just a version of "but first, we must do this before we can do that." In the trenches of parenting, we often need a mix of a bit of bribery, what is your reward going to be, and some very clear outlining of the steps between point A and point B. Some of us need a bit more of a clear outlining of the steps between point A and point B, as if we have a little more trouble getting from A to B. You know, shoes would be good to wear before you leave the house, says the woman who has been known to get out her front steps in her slippers. But Jesus isn't actually parenting in these little vignettes we get on the road to Jerusalem. He's not necessarily doing a nice job of outlining how we go from A to B, and he's not necessarily trying to figure out how to invite the disciples to join him in that journey along the path of least resistance. In fact, Jesus is kind of harsh and cold and not particularly warm and fuzzy at all. This is not the Jesus that, I don't know about you, but I like to tell people about. This is not the Jesus of love and joy and inclusion and how great it is to be in the life of Christ. This Jesus, this one that the Gospel of Luke describes, is sort of brisk and almost utterly uncaring. "Oh, your father died and you need to bury him? Too bad. I'm out of here." And if your only source on the subject were these lines from Luke, you might believe that Jesus is of the no regrets philosophy. Make a decision, don't look back. Now, obviously, this isn't the entire gospel, so this isn't all we get of Jesus, which is why perhaps when it's all we hear of Jesus this morning, we feel a little like, "Who's this guy? He's not the one I like." But some of why Jesus seems so harsh is probably because he has set his face towards Jerusalem. He is determined to risk his very life for what he believes, to communicate the gospel. And apparently, this makes him a little testy. It probably makes some of the disciples a little testy, too, a little fearful, a little anxious. It's hard for us to know now for sure how well the disciples tracked what Jesus was going to face in Jerusalem. Strictly in a narrative sense, in many of the Gospels, they stand in for those of us who are still working out what it will mean to follow Jesus in our own lives. And so the disciples often get to ask the questions, or they play the fool, because we who are hearing this story need someone to do that work. But despite how the narrative works, it's probably clear that the disciples actually did have some idea that for Jesus, who was preaching what was already upsetting the established leaders, for that Jesus to go into Jerusalem at the Passover could lead to some trouble. And we who have not that long ago walked through Holy Week and celebrated Easter know that Jerusalem needs arrest and trial, crucifixion, and the persecution of the disciples. In this context, perhaps Jesus is not just being difficult to be difficult, but really testing those who wish to follow him. "If you will have nowhere safe to call home because you follow me, do you still want to follow me? If you have to abandon your families, do you still want to follow me? When things get hard, and they are going to get hard, Are you sure you still want to follow me? I wonder how we might answer those questions. If we have our own lists of things we need to do before we could follow Jesus to Jerusalem. If there are limits to how far we are willing to go when it comes to what Jesus might ask of us. I know that's been true for me, and it probably still is. My prayer life has definitely included some very direct discussion of what my limits are when it comes to following Jesus. And some of those prayers have undoubtedly been little more than excuses, little more than rationalizations, little more than my desire to maintain my comfortable life in the face of Jesus calling me to something new, something frightening, something challenging. So I wonder what your limits are and what stands in your way when it comes to following Jesus. Well, I think those questions are important, and I do hope you spend some time and wonder about them. I also worry that they risk us getting lost in guilt and fear. Maybe this is only me, but sometimes when we talk about following Jesus to Jerusalem, I feel guilty and a little inadequate. I often feel like I'm not doing enough. I'm not embodying Christianity adequately. I snapped at my children this morning. Some days my prayer life is hardly more than a few moments in the car. I know that the level of waste McDonald's produces is terrible for the environment, but Diet Coke for a dollar is a sanity saver and my preferred method of caffeine intake afternoons. I really would like to love my neighbor, but I really hate that I can smell every cigarette he has on his deck in my house. So I am rather like Paul, I suppose. The flesh's desires struggling with the call of the Spirit. That desire to be who God calls us to be, while also being realistic about who we are. For the record, Paul's list of vices in the selection from Galatians this morning is a pretty standard list. He uses it several times, and it's reflective of his cultural environment. We can discuss another time if we rightly understand all of those vices when we interpret them through our modern lens. I'm not sure we always do. And I often think that Paul gets it a little bit wrong to kind of create this epic battle between good and evil, casting our bodies, the flesh, as evil and the spirit as good, as if it were so simple. But he does have a point. He does accurately describe something many of us have experienced in our lives, that sense of feeling at war with ourselves, when we are our own worst enemies, knowing what we want and yet not doing that thing we need to get there. And I don't know that it benefits me in any way, nor you, to get lost feeling guilty that our path to following Jesus does not look like someone else's. Feeling inadequate only helps if it motivates us to renew our commitments and practices, not if it weighs us down and prevents us from acting at all. And maybe it's finding that sweet spot, that where we are attentive to the next thing that Jesus is asking us to do without feeling so disempowered and racked by guilt that we haven't already gotten there. Maybe that's what it really means to follow Jesus. And maybe that's why it's a lifetime's work, not a task we get to check off on a to-do list completed once and for all. So I was reading all of the lessons this week. I noticed something. In the story of Elijah and Elisha, one of the themes is how Elisha refuses to leave Elijah. Our reading today actually cuts out one of the exchanges. Three times does Elijah try to tell Elisha to go, and three times Elisha says, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." And then we have this passage from the Gospel of Luke in which Jesus keeps asking, "You say you want to follow me, but will you? Will you be here for me? Will you really be here for me?" When I am the recipient of that kind of anxiety, from another person, I can find it wearing, exhausting, in fact. But I wonder what it feels like to flip that around and think about when we've received that kind of assurance. When have we been like Elijah, with the disciples saying to us, "I will be with you. You cannot make me go." When has someone in your life shown up and kept showing up despite how messy your life might be? Perhaps even despite the ways in which you have tried to avoid them or reject them. Because I think the flip side of Jesus' anxiety about if his disciples are prepared to follow him is in fact his assurance to them that he will be there for them. He will be that person who commits to them and stays with them. He will be there for them and for us with unconditional love and a promise of deep connection to God that we can do nothing to earn and nothing to lose. Yes, it will come with expectations and demands. Yes, it might call us into places that are uncomfortable and new and challenging. But when we go into those places, we go not alone, but with Jesus himself. And that, my friends, is good news indeed. Amen. Amen.